Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Wealth Psychology with Emily Bouchard on Sylvia Global Radio.
Good morning. Oh, it's a great day. I am here live from Tucson, Arizona, where I went to Miraval, which is an extraordinary, just beautiful, peaceful retreat center and spa and resort just outside of Tucson, and got a chance to preview a rough cut of a movie again that I actually had seen up in Seattle and Wood the Island, called Money and Life by a woman named Katie Teague, who decided that it was important for us to start having a different conversation about money. And she went around and interviewed world thinkers, economists, the former head of J.P. Morgan, really exceptional people in this film, Lynn Twist, the author of The Soul of Money. And she wanted to start an evocative conversation and get people really thinking about our relationship to money. And we just had a fabulous time last night with a group of women and a few very aware men who wanted to be a part of the conversation as well. And we talked about the whole concept of how money is actually an invention that people created, and that it was an agreement that we had to really allow for the fluid exchange of gifts that we have and services. And it has grown to this really astonishing proportion in our lives, where we designed a world where our lives are basically dependent on having money. And it's not necessarily that case. And it's really fascinating to start entering into a picture and a conversation around, oh, we created this. What else could we create? You know, this whole concept of this is our dream we're living in. We can kind of wake up within the dream and say, how do we want to change it? And one of the purposes that we feel Sylvia Global represents and why we've chosen to be a part of this incredible network is it's all about changing the conversation around money and wealth and really, really giving people what it is that we're most hungry for, which is connection and to feel that we matter and that we can engage in the world in really effective ways where we have contribution to make, and that it goes way beyond money. And one of the biggest challenges that we find in our work with women in particular is when they find themselves defined by their money. And when they are the breadwinners or the one that's coming to the relationship with a greater amount of wealth or assets, and it's a significant disparity in the relationship, or when they're dating and they're dating people where you know, they're having to contend with the fact that they're showing up with possibly much more resources available to them than the men that they're interested in. And so we're dedicating this show to that very important conversation. It came up a couple of shows ago when we had a caller call in about to go to a women's conference in Rome where she was going to be presenting on sex, money, and relationships. And we had a conversation about her question related to what do you do when the woman is bringing in more money and has more money than the men. And it was very vibrant and got us thinking a lot about it. And so we wanted to give our listeners a chance to really dive into this conversation more fully. You are so welcome to call in anytime at 347-215-6138. You can also go to Twitter, and you can go to Sylvia Global, and the hashtag that we're using is Wealth Psychology, all one word. We're happy to have your questions come in via Twitter, via the call and the number, and also you can go to the Sylvia Global Facebook page, and you can post there too. And you can always access this show at blogtalkradio.com/ Sylvia Global. So to dive into this topic, one of the things we wanted to open up here is who is having this conversation and what are the concerns. So one thing that we have in our work is a really safe space for people to come and bring concerns, questions, worries, doubts, hopes, dreams, where they feel like they're really going to be heard and listened to, when they might not necessarily get the sympathy given in the general population because they are coming to these concerns because they have significant wealth or just are, you know, in a powerful position in a company or, you know, something where there's prestige, there's power, there's engagement in the world that doesn't necessarily fit traditional gender roles of women and men. So some of the questions and the concerns that we hear, depending on where you are in your relationship, range from if you're dating, when and how do I go about telling the person that I'm seeing, whether it's a man or a woman, about my net worth, my salary, my trust fund, and how is it that I can trust that they will want to be with me and not just because I have more money, you know, that I, that what's the reason why they're choosing to be with me? How do I set that up? So if you're dating, you may find that that question's in your mind. And, of course, you know, this also applies to men. We're gearing this towards women because of the disparity in the gender roles, and we'll talk more about that as well. If you are dating very serious and an engagement has happened, then a big question and concern comes up around, do we have a prenup? If we do need a prenup, if it's actually being imposed on me that I have to have a prenup, then it's about, wow, how do I approach this conversation about drawing up a prenup when it can be so emotional, when it's, I don't want to piss them off, I don't want to push them away, I want to build a life with this person, how do I do that? So those are questions that we face with prenups, and we work with couples to make it so that that conversation can actually strengthen the relationship going forward. So we can talk about that in particular. And then we talk with people who are looking at, they're married, they're raising children, and we're looking at how they're being role models and how they're modeling and showing up in terms of ongoing conflict around money, differences around money, decision-making around it, especially when the woman is in more of a position of power and where the other partner, if you're married, your husband, if you're a partnership with a man, if you're in partnership with a woman, is in a less than position. How do you navigate this effectively so it's healthy, so the kids really see what they can grow into for themselves in terms of how they're going to relate around money and financial decisions with their partners? So those are some of the issues that we can talk about. And Jamie, the person who's usually on this call with me, my business partner, the founder of Wealth Legacy Group, is located in Israel, and she's going to be joining us via text because she is having trouble with her connectivity, and when we're dealing with being across a whole ocean and a couple of continents, we need to switch our sails and deal with, okay, there's other ways we can connect when we can't actually get onto a landline or a phone or in the internet. So one thing that we want to set up right from the beginning is, along with hearing from one caller that this was an interesting question, something that they cared about, we also know the research shows that over 32% of married couples in the U.S. are in this situation where the woman is earning and holding more of the wealth in the couple than the man, and it's definitely growing at a rapid rate. And what we want to do and what Jamie wants to make sure we cover is that we want to really look at how it is in your relationships when you're bringing more wealth, when you're bringing more resources, could be through your work, could be through inheritance. And those are different issues when it comes from those different places, and we can address both of those for you as well. So again, if you want to call in about these topics, the number is 347-215-6138, or you can tweet us at hashtag WealthPsychology. So let's get started. I can just jump into some of these topics. One of the things in terms of dating, So if you're in a position where you are single, you're successful, perhaps you've been the beneficiary of a trust fund or a family that has wealth and significance and status, there's different levels at which you're going to be playing. So I want to speak into those. So certain people that are listening may actually have status where their name is recognized, where pretty soon after somebody meets them and knows their name, they're going to be able to Google them and find out that perhaps they own a number of businesses in the area or in the state or in the country with that family's name on it. Or they can find out pretty easily that that person's grandfather owned a major football team, you know, that sort of thing. Because of the way that the internet works, it doesn't take long for somebody to actually easily find out a lot of history about you. I mean, I was dating somebody, I met him, he was completely not on the internet, I couldn't find out anything about him, and he was able to find my maiden name, who my father was, and my master's thesis from graduate school, and I was astonished. I was like, wow, I really need to look at what my identity is on the web. So you can imagine when you're dealing with a prominent family name that can be recognized, that know immediately that whoever you're interacting with can know about you in way more details than you would ever have maybe wanted to let them know. And, you know, just another aside, because of how the internet is, anything that you post, whether you think it's private, only going to your family, people have ways of accessing that. So just be aware that whatever you put online is definitely accessible. And so privacy has taken on a whole another level. And, of course, you can do a lot of background checking around the people that you're dating. And, you know, all's fair. I want to make sure that you know that you need to be smart about who you are seeing. And one of the things that we, when we coach women in this particular situation and they're dating, and it may be just that, you know, you've gotten a promotion and you're now very high up in a company, or perhaps you're CEO of a company, or maybe you're running a family business, you know, whatever it might be, you obviously have some capacity to make the decisions around hiring people, knowing who the right people are that you can trust with in your work environment, perhaps within your home environment, who you would hire to bring into your home. You know, you're going to do background checks. You're going to look at references. You're going to find out who is this person. And, you know, with the advent of online dating, that's even more important because people can often present themselves differently than who they really are. Just to give an aside around when I was dating this man who found out all about me on the internet, the only reason that I continued to pursue seeing him when I couldn't find out about him on the internet was I found out that somebody who was a very dear friend of mine knew this man, was very close to him and close to his wife before his wife died. And so I had a personal person in my life that I trusted that knew this man in a number of different situations. And I also got to watch the two of them interact, and I learned a lot about him through that as well. So some of the things that we recognize are important for our clients to pay attention to are watching these people that they're interacting with, that they're dating in a number of situations, and really getting the data. So what can happen is we can kind of get blinders sometimes in terms of how we really like somebody and we think they like us, and we can bypass a lot of data that we're actually getting. And the other side is we can maybe be a little bit more paranoid or overly cautious because of our concern that maybe they only want to be with us because of the money. And that can also skew how we're looking at the data. So we want to invite you to be like a participant observer. Anthropologists do this when they're doing studies. So you're participating in the dating, you're participating in showing up and engaging, and then you're actually observing and taking note. You're watching and listening for how does this person respond or interact with me during certain topics in certain situations. I remember going on one date, had a lovely time. He was engaging. We had a phenomenal dinner. It was really exciting. He was very attractive. And we were leaving the table at the restaurant to go out, and I forgot my shawl. And I turned to go back to the table to get my shawl, and he stood between me and the table, and his body became rock solid, and I actually bumped into him. And it did not change. There was nothing yielding about it. It was this very imposing, intimidating stance he automatically took. It was his automatic way of being. And immediately, my body let me know it engaged to a place of, oh, there was immediate fear and acknowledgement of this be a dangerous man. It was the first time I'd met him, and I definitely took in that information. And I told him what I needed to do, and then he waited for a minute, and then it was like he gave me permission with his body to go get my shawl. And I have to tell you, this was maybe a 30-second interaction, if that. And I got a ton of data. And one of the key things that we really stress with our clients is the importance of listening to your body. My body told me immediately that I needed to pay attention. I felt it in my gut. I had a shot of energy go up my spine. And some people will interpret something like that as evocative, as hot, as exciting. Just notice if there's other things that you need to pay attention to as well. I've been working with a client who has been in a really, really difficult relationship for 2 years with somebody who had a very domineering personality. And at first, she was very engaged and intrigued and loved the what she experienced as playfulness and this kind of dominant submission way of interacting. And she is now in this downward spiral with him where he holds all of the control, all of the power. And she, even though she has more money, she has more capacity to actually be very powerful in the world, she has given all of that away in order to be with him. And it's she's working with me in terms of trying to get her power back and not have lost it so much in terms of getting love. So getting that data can be really important early on because it's a lot harder to get out once you're in and you're engaged in that pattern. So some things to look for in terms of trusting yourself are really listening and knowing your body. And if you're not sure, if you don't know if you can trust your body, maybe you've had some relationships that you've gotten to the point where you don't really trust yourself and how you assess the person that you're dating, you should definitely watch and notice and get data with this person and how they are with your friends. So you want to do social situations. If they say, no, I don't want to go out with your friends, that's good data. If they are disrespectful to you in front of them, that's really good data. If they are honoring, respectful, but maybe they're a little too friendly with your friends. You know, you want to be really looking, and then you want to be connecting with your friends around what they see and really listen and gather it. Even don't go to defensiveness. And there's going to be a part of you that's going to want to defend him or her. There's a part of you that's going to want to really make sure that they see that person that you care about in the best light. But know that these people are your advocate. They love you, and they want what's best for you. And sometimes we can lose sight of that. So if you're not so sure about trusting yourself, definitely trust your friends. Now, let's see. We have a Facebook question. Thanks for writing in. The question is, going into our marriage, I was making more than my soon-to-be husband. He was okay with that, but it was others in the community who made comments or raised eyebrows. What advice can you give to encourage and reaffirm his masculinity to others outside the relationship that respond this way so that they will respect him? Oh, thank you for asking that question. I'm happy to jump into that next domain of this concern about when is a disparity. Oh, and I love how you said that in terms of affirming his masculinity. again, we have really strong gender roles in our world, in our relationships. And men really have a sense of vitality and strength and accessing their masculinity when they're producing. There's been a lot of research around this. And for them to feel like they're producing for the woman in their life or perhaps the other man in their life, we want to make sure we're really clear that we honor whatever relationship people are in. We are speaking about marriage here because this is somebody who's engaged and loves this man, and it's a woman, and they are getting married. So I'm going to be speaking into that directly. And so ways that the two of you as a couple can feel really great about the agreements that you have around how and in what ways he's contributing, he's producing, and that feel really good to you all. And then he can stand really tall and firm in that. And we often recommend encouraging the man to have a really good humor around it and to have some really easy comebacks around it and ways of kind of deflecting it. And, you know, it could be one of those things of, preemptively, I really got lucky and so did she. We have an extraordinary partnership that I wish you and others could have as well, and I hope that you do too, where you frame it from the standpoint of the we, the partnership, and how fortunate both of you feel, and then continue to embody and emulate that. And so ways men that can produce in situations where the wife, the fiancé, is contributing more to the marriage financially is to really expand out your definition of wealth and contribution. So things like how do we have more creativity and fun in our lives? How do we show up in our community as leaders and really giving back? How do we show up for our children and the schools that our children are in a way that really promotes our values? How do we enrich our lives by coming from that place? And co-designing, co-creating that. When we work with people using what we call our Rich Life Portfolio, we support couples in clarifying not just your values, but how you embody and live those in your lives as a partnership. And so where money is one facet of the equation, but where there's so many other facets to the equation. And so we really look at, hey, what are the assets he's bringing to the relationship? You know, if this caller was on the phone, I would be asking her things like, what are the strengths, the talents, the gifts, the abilities that this man is bringing to the relationship that has you saying, yes, I want to spend the rest of my life with this man? And then, you know, what oftentimes these are qualities that money couldn't buy and that make it so they're invaluable. And then there's also other qualities that are extraordinarily helpful. You know, perhaps the woman who's coming into the marriage is really good at producing the money, and then the two of you work together in terms of how to be really rigorous in terms of how you're managing, stewarding, and being very smart about it, and where he is there totally empowering her and making sure that, you know, he's doing the research, he's coming up with the strategies, and then working with the advisors with her so that she's empowered and educated in those conversations, so that the two of you are working as a really effective team around that, and where it's like, yeah, she's bringing the initial money to the table, and then, you know, we as a couple, we are looking at how are we going to take care of this and have it grow and how to expand it and how to really save it and also share it, how to give it away in ways that really are keeping with our values. And one of the things that happened in the conversation that I was in last night is the movie was very evocative in terms of having people in the financial world speaking about ways of interacting with our money that is much more strategic and where we're aware of what we're investing in. And so that's another way that a man who's not necessarily bringing as much of the money to the relationship can really be of service by doing the due diligence, by really looking into, hey, what can we invest in that really emulates our values, like companies that don't use child labor or that are really into low impact and sustainability or that are local, really looking at our local economy and how to invest in people that are doing good works right here where we are. Those are just examples of the values people have and then how to do that, you know, strengthening our country, strengthening third world countries, whatever it might be. There are tremendous investment opportunities that can happen, microfinance opportunities. So using that creativity and engaging the whole family in that discussion where maybe he could be the spearhead of it. And then he can have a lot of good humor around it where it's, we've got the best of both worlds. She brings home the bacon and then we fry it together in the pan. And boy, do we have a lot of fun enjoying it, nourishing ourselves, and then looking at how we're giving it to others and really making it work and supporting that farm that bacon's coming from. And however he wants to be a contribution gets to be honored as well. So I hope that answers that question sufficiently. And happy to answer more. If you are listening live, you can call in 347-215-6138. You can tweet us at #WealthPsychology. And you can also go to our Facebook page, Sylvia Global. And thanks so much for listening. We are on the Wealth Psychology program here. I'm Emily Bouchard from the Wealth Legacy Group. And Jamie Trigger-Mooney is working feverishly to get on this call. She's actually texted that she's coming up with other creative solutions and going to somebody else's home whose internet is working. So we'll see what happens. She contacts us for this call from Israel. So it's an extraordinary thing when technology works and it's seamless, and it's always interesting when it doesn't and how we get to be creative. And as we say with our clients all the time, shift our sails when the wind shifts direction. Doesn't really serve us to get upset or in this awful place because things aren't happening the way we want. We just get clear and we have a direction we're going in. If the winds shift direction, we move our sails and have them shift in that direction so we can keep tacking and going where we're going. It may not look like how we thought it was going to look, but we can still get there. So going on, we talked a bit about dating. We talked a little bit about marriage when there's disparity. I want to talk a little bit about prenups. It's such a loaded conversation. We could devote a whole show just about this. When you're in a situation as a woman who's coming to a relationship and you have significant assets and wealth, perhaps from trust, perhaps from being an inheritor in other ways, perhaps from what you have just built up in your savings and your stock options, from your role as a really successful woman professionally, perhaps through your company that you've created. It's very important that you look at, wow, I love the old vision of meeting somebody, falling in love, and we're going to be together for the rest of our lives. And holding that as the intentionality when you're getting married, and also knowing that there's a strong reality that's facing us in the world, which is that the vast majority of couples will not stay together. And it's unfortunate that it is the case, and typically it's as short a time as 7 years, and it's super unfortunate. And want to make sure that you know that we want to support you in having the strongest, healthiest, vital relationship you can for as long as you're together and with the commitment of going forward for being for the rest of your lives, and also setting up a very, very strong foundation for that. And one of the things that we speak into for people in this situation is being able to navigate and have the conversation around the prenup effectively, respectfully, in a way that honors all the concerns, in a way that really has your both of your needs be respected, expressed, where there's a lot of safety, will do wonders for your relationship, because research has shown that one of the number one reasons why couples don't stay together is ongoing conflicts around money. And that's one of the reasons we're so passionate about doing this work. If anything we can do to bring more peace and fulfillment to relationships, we want to do. And money is such a taboo subject. And we haven't had a role model of how to have these conversations effectively. So we either don't have the conversations, and a lot of resentment builds up, and undercurrents happen that end up getting acted out and end up producing the results that we didn't want, which is when the marriage and the relationship kind of hurt. And so it's a bit of a surprising, ironic twist that when we actually take the time and put the energy and invest in starting out right by saying, look, not planning for divorce. What we're doing is taking care of and being very smart and savvy around, hey, life can throw us different curveballs. How do we want to be prepared for those? And how do we really want to take care of these? And being proactive and being smart. And it's just like if you were given a bunch of money out of the blue, you'd want to be as smart as you possibly could around what you're doing with that money now and in the future. And it's about being a really good, wise steward of it. And the more you invest up front in understanding this whole phenomenon, the better. And we do prenup weekends for couples, and there's other great professionals out there that can work with couples around how to have this conversation in a way that makes it so you feel like, wow, we can have a conversation about anything and do it well and be very effective and strengthen our union. And one of the things that we put forward is that you can completely have your financial concerns for you, for your future children that you want to have together, for the bloodline perhaps that you're part of that you may not even have any say in. You may have a lot of emotion around the fact that you're being told you have to have a prenup and you don't even necessarily want one. And then you also may have the situation where you know that you want to have this prenup. It's very important to you, and you want your partner to feel totally honored and respected. And you can craft and create this in a way where you can design your prenup to honor your relationship and your values moving forward. And we can talk more about that. I want to welcome Jamie to the show. Jamie, you are one resourceful cookie. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's a good thing we had our show on what to do when the unexpected comes up, because this was definitely unexpected on multiple levels. But I'm thrilled and delighted to be here, and I appreciate you taking over the reins.
Oh, yeah. I know you're going to be doing it at some point when I'm unable to get on a call or on the show. So thanks for being here. I don't know how much you've been able to hear. Just to catch you up and the listeners up, we've been talking about women who are the feminine breadwinners, the asset holders, the ones that are coming to the relationship with more than their partners. And we've been talking about it in terms of dating, just began to open up the conversation around prenups. And we had a really fabulous question come in around marriage and how to really allow and shore up a man's masculinity and his identity in the world when they as a couple may feel really strong in who they are, but also wanting the world to respect him and not just see him as, a freeloader. So those are some of the things that we've been addressing. I love that you get to be here because you are such a, you love taking in the input. I know you've done quite a bit of background and research on this topic as well. So wanted to know if you had any thoughts you wanted to add in at this time. And then we'll see if there are other callers that call in. And, let me give the number out before you start. The numbers you want to call in to ask your question about this topic or anything to do with wealth psychology, the number is 347-215-6138. You can also tweet us at hashtag wealth psychology, and you can Facebook us at Sylvia Global on Facebook. So welcome, Jamie.
Thank you. I would say that this is a tremendously important issue, particularly as the numbers are increasing every day. You know, we're soon coming upon 50% of households having this situation, and particularly with, you know, the breadwinner sometimes comes from making the money themselves, and sometimes it's an inheritance. And but always we hear it as a huge concern for both women and men, and it's one of the most pertinent issues that clients come to us, and also that the research shows. So we are delighted to be able to answer people's questions and really start to open up this conversation.
Yes, and one of the things we want to make sure is that we also want to be a resource for people, and so along with, you know, we can quote statistics and those sorts of things, we also want to make sure you know that there's some great books out there that can really support you. And one of the ones that we found to be very evocative, there's one called Breadwinner Wives and the Men That They Marry, which is, of course, just says it all right there. And that is by Randy Minotaur. And then the other one that's really evocative is Rocking Your Role by Jenny Garrett. And Jenny's great. And she really just goes down the list and which speaks directly to the challenges that we work with couples on and women in this situation. And one of the big issues that women in this situation face in our culture is that because we're in these gender roles as well, we can be really impacted by not only are we working really hard and we're the ones that are bringing in the majority of the money, but we also are the ones that are expected or take on and continue to take on the role of the household chores, the household keeping, making sure that all the food and the laundry and all of the different aspects of life happen or dialed in. And one of the things that was fascinating in the research, and this was through, I don't think it was from that book, it was from another article, is that research showed, this is so interesting, and Jamie, I want your thoughts on this as well.
When I got really heated up when I heard this.
When women bring more to the marriage financially, men end up doing less of the housework. And it was quite extraordinary to read that. It was like, wait a second, the disparity, it's like the women have to take on even more. And you know, want to say something about it, Jamie? And then we can go into why the researchers think this is the case.
Well, I mean, it's tremendous to think that as we, the original thought when women started to work more was that there would be this exchange theory, that as women took on more outside work, there would be a natural equalization of what happened in the home, because they were also splitting what happened outside. And that was the prediction. I thought, oh, great, we'll be able to throw out traditional gender roles and, you know, we'll move forward with a new culture where men and women split responsibilities both inside and outside the household. And it seems that that, you know, prediction really didn't come true at all. And it's very fascinating, Emily, the what the researchers found, because, you know, you sort of want to jump, you know, you and I are two women, jump to vilifying the men. And it really is a shared responsibility in terms of what researchers were finding. They found that there was a component of what was happening with the men, but there was also a big component of what was happening for women, that because our culture passed down that women should be the you know, housekeepers and raise the children and keep the house, and that when you walk into a house, you think, you know, if the house is clean, that's because of the woman. If the house is dirty, that's because of the woman. That women were really taking that role on, and they were feeling that they didn't want to emasculate their husbands. They were feeling guilty about working so many hours, and then they felt that they still had to do these things in the household to keep their femininity. So it was very interesting that they could have one role outside and then come into the household and come into very gendered stereotype roles that happen between the couples. And I want to, you know, I'm curious to hear your reaction to that, Emily, as a working woman.
Yes. it's really interesting because there's a sense of, wow, as much as a man may be judged externally by, you know, he's, you know, is he a freeloader, there's this other thing in terms of the cultural expectations. And I was, when we were doing the research for this and in our work, you know, when we found out Sarah Raley, who's a researcher on gender distribution and when there's income disparity, she's from the University of Maryland, she made it really clear that it's all about the expectations about what you're going to do as a mother and as a wife, and then what fathers are supposed to do. And so there's all of this, like, it's not about our biology, and it's again, it's this, I started out the show by talking about how money is an agreement we have, and it's something that's man-made, and it's a decision that we made about how we were going to interact. And we can change that story if we're not happy with what's happening. And the same is true about our gender roles, and that we are really impacted by our societal standards and expectations that we place on ourselves and that we believe is the right and only way to be, that we fall into without necessarily questioning. And what I love about our work, Jamie, is that we really blow the lid off of that. We support people in a bunch of effective ways, looking at what are the historical patterns and the stories that we've bought into that have shaped our reality, and what are the ones that we really love and embrace and want to go forward with, and what are the ones that we are ready to let go of and say, how do I want to create my life? I'm the script writer. I am the storyteller of this life. What could it look like within the confines of this culture that I'm in? And as a partnership, when we work with couples, it is all about life design. And I'd love for you to speak a little bit about that, Jamie, because I know how passionate you are about, you know, designing your future now. Oh, but wait, can you hold that, Jamie? Because we have Stephen on the line calling in from California. Stephen, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the call. Thank you for so much for calling into the show. What can we do for you?
Hi. Well, right now I'm currently the breadwinner, but once my wife and I have children, and we don't know what age yet, but we're looking at transitioning from me being the breadwinner to her being the breadwinner, and kind of what have you seen like that transition from a male breadwinner household to a female breadwinner household, I guess would be my question, or anything related to that type of transition.
That's a great question. So
consciously, we work with a lot of people who are doing that kind of transition, and even transition in and out, because being the breadwinner, as you made such a great point, isn't a static thing. It isn't like you get a tattoo on your arm and it says breadwinner and you're the breadwinner forevermore. There can be periods of time when you switch in and out, and it can be very fluid. So during that transition period, what's great is to sit down with your partner and think about as Emily started to speak about, when you're designing your future, what are your goals? What is it that you want to create for your family? You know, what kind of money do you need to earn to have the lifestyle that you want? What kind of time do you want to spend with your children, with one another, in work, out of work? You know, as Emily said earlier, money is something we designed. It's a tool. There are a lot of other tools and resources that families need to bring, that parents need to bring to a household. There's time. There's money. There's what people are talented in. There's what they want to do. So being able to sit down and organize yourselves around what your goals are, and then who's most adept at doing it. You know, Emily and I are partners in our business, and there's things that she does very effortlessly and would take me forever to do. So instead of me breaking my teeth doing it, we're designing our work situation in a way that those are the things that Emily does. And likewise, there's things that come very easily and enjoyably to me, but aren't as desirable to Emily. So you can do the same thing in a partnership that's two parents, and really designing how much time do we each want with the kids? What kind of relationship do we want our kids to have with a parent. What kind of hours do we want to each work? And then it's all just a matter of saying, you might decide you want to work very little. Okay, well, then we might have to adjust our lifestyle to support that. Or we might want to be doing a lot more in terms of finances. So you adjust your lifestyle in that way. And it's a continued conversation.
And
Emily,
Stephen,
you want to add to that?
Yeah, great question. I'm so glad you called in. The other thing is, here are some things to watch out for that you guys want to be proactive as you're designing this together. And I love that you are thinking ahead about it and you have that capacity to do that. So one of the things that's really important is that to avoid resentment building up is that there's a sense of the home life having very clear roles and understandings about who's responsible for what in a way that feels very fair and honoring of both of you. And where you guys are clear on what the standards are, right? So let's say she has a standard that the kitchen is always completely wiped down and spotless before you go to bed, and it's your role to clean up the kitchen. And your standard is, you know, it's fine for dishes to be in the drainer and to drip dry, and it's okay for a pot to be soaking, right? So you have a different standard for the kitchen. So if she wants to give you, and you agree that you're doing the role of keeping the kitchen clean, she needs to be okay with that standard of cleanliness and that you all have an agreement about that up front. And you can apply that to any aspect of your home. And that's very important. And then the other one is giving her space to really drop into her feminine when she comes home. She's been out there in the world. She's been in her more masculine role producing. And when she comes home, she wants to rest in being in the space of her man producing for her. And, like, little things, like, I remember one woman telling us about how her husband would draw her a bath, and then he would put her towel in the dryer so that when she got out of the bath, he would give her a warm towel. And I can't tell you what that small little thing does for a woman in terms of having her feel so held, nurtured, and understood. So that's just one example. You'll know what are the things that are really going to nurture her. Another woman I'm working with, her husband makes her a hot fudge sundae and brings it to bed. And then they have their kind of taking apart the day and really connecting around ice cream sundaes when they want to do that. So you'll come up with your little ritual, but you want to make sure that you have time as a couple and to really just drop in and connect. And one of the things that happens in situations where the woman takes on that role of being the breadwinner is if she takes on a lot of the household responsibilities as well and doesn't feel like she can trust you to take care of them, she will end up harboring some resentment and feel really exhausted. If you're noticing that, you want to look at, hey, how do we shift this? How do I really... What is it that's not getting met here that would really make it so that we can both be satisfied? And then for you, you got to make sure you have something that is enlivening for you and engaging you in your passion and what you care about so that as much as you are parenting and being home with the kids, which is so powerful, that you have a sense of your identity being more than just that. It's very important for anybody in that role. Jamie, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say also that I think it's important to remember, you talked about earlier, Emily, about splitting up the expectations. And I think sometimes what gets lost in when somebody is managing the household is that sometimes partners think, well, we're both doing the same amount. And they forget that the management position of planning the meals, making the grocery list, you know, thinking about whose, permission slip needs to be signed, that might not look like an active role, and that is a really important role in the family, and it takes up a lot of time and energy. So thinking about who's going to manage the household too is a big step. And then having that person be the person who gets deferred to, so that if you're the one home, you get to claim that as your domain and sort of work with, you know, these are the things that we need done, who wants to take what responsibility. I see with couples all the time that that piece just gets missed, and people forget that that actually takes up a lot of time for the person who's at home. So I think that's an important piece to remember as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Stephen, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, we wish you guys the best success. It's such a great thing to have a partnership where you're already in that conversation. Great. Well, I want to make sure that we cover more of this topic in terms of kind of delineating some of the main challenges that women in this position can face. If you wanted to try and call in, we're a little bit short on time, but the number is 347-215-6138, or you can tweet your question to hashtag wealthpsychology. We're on Sylvia Global Radio Network, and we are talking about wealth psychology. And the main thing we want to get across is that women in this position can have a number of different challenges that they face and that we work with them. And the reason we're talking about wealth psychology is this is what falls into the domain of the psychology of the emotional impact of all of this. So women can often encounter experiences of guilt and, again, feeling like no matter what they do, they're not doing enough in whatever the role that they're in, especially when children are in the equation. They can also see and be driven a little bit by fear and worry where the temporariness of this, it could all be gone, or perhaps there's a sense of denial, like, oh, it's only going to be this way for a little while until he makes it big, when it's not necessarily going to be the case. So really, again, having the data and looking at what's happening. And then we work a lot with couples and with women around life balance and having a sense of their overall well-being as they're being well, how they're looking at taking care of all these different domains of life in a way that feels more in sync for them and their values. When we find ourselves living and coming from a place that's not necessarily where our values are, we will be out of balance, and it will start showing up in our health and in feeling exhausted and frazzled and resentful. Those are all really good indicators about that. Jamie?
This piece about balance, like, you know, we can't stress it enough. I think that part of where couples get out of balance in this sense is because there's so many loud messages in our culture about how it's supposed to be done. And so I, you know, find particularly with women, there's almost a Doris Day syndrome when you're out and you're working and then you think there's always that one parent and your kid's class is doing tons of art projects, who's volunteering, who always makes food. And, you know, we have so many clients who have that voice going, okay, great, I'm really doing well in my career, you know, I'm really earning money for our family, and I'm never volunteering in the classroom, and I'm not the mother who brings the treats, and I don't have the really fun birthday parties. So there has to be a sense of balance there, too.
Right. We can't all be Martha Stewart either. Yeah. Jamie,
I call it the Doris Day syndrome.
Yeah. Jamie, we have Sarah on the line with just a few minutes left. I'd love to be able to get her question. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Right.
Sarah, what's your question?
Well, I was just wondering, what advice could you give when the woman works from home? So, you know, sometimes I kind of feel like I should be able to do more housework because he leaves for work and I work from home, but then my work keeps me busy all day, and so I still kind of can't really get into the major housework until the end of the day. Do you have any advice on how to balance the household maintenance, I guess?
Yeah.
In that situation?
Great. This is great. Great
Such
question.
A great question, Sarah.
Oh, my
gosh.
Jamie and I both have been speaking to that one. Jamie, you want to?
Yeah. We know intimately. I work out of the home. My husband goes out, and it is very tempting. You know, I think it's about having very clear expectations about who's doing what and saying, just because I work in the house doesn't mean that I'm available. So, you know, I have like a hotel thing on my door, do not disturb. And I've got to make it really clear to my kids, I can't take you in carpools at this time. You know, and if we're going to build it in with my husband, then it's like, okay, so that's time during the day that I'm doing stuff. Then I might need to go back to work once the kids are put to bed. It's really about transparency and having those open conversations, both with your partner and as kids get older with your kids, because they see you there and they think, oh, I can just knock on the door and have mom take me, you know, to this place or that place, to a friend's house. How about you, Emily? What do you see works well?
Oh, it's a great question, Sarah. One of the things that's really important is having clear boundaries for yourself, too, because I also work with women in your situation, and I've encountered it, too, where once the kids go to bed and I've taken care of the household, I end up going back to work as well at home, too. And it's like it doesn't work. You need to have your time on the clock and your time off the clock. And being very clear about that. And whatever the hours are that you need to have, you need to be clear up front, make sure the family knows, and that, you know, working, I got my working hat on. And when I'm not, I am home being the housewife. You know, and I really love working with couples around having a really team spirit. And, you know, when he's coming home, then it's like, okay, what are we cooking for dinner tonight? And what needs to get done tonight? Should we throw in some laundry while we're doing this? And so it's a we, and there's enjoyment around it, and things kind of flow in a really great way. So thanks for calling in at the very end. Yep.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, as kids get older, it's great to include them. You know, you can have an hour before dinner where everybody's working towards getting dinner prepared and putting in laundry. Let's move quickly. We've got three more minutes, Emily. We've got some, as always, we like to leave our listeners with some takeaways. So our evocative question for today is, who are your role models as a woman? Oftentimes, as this is a newer situation where women are starting to earn more and a growing situation, there aren't great role models. So looking to see the women who are earning more and balancing, and men, you know, looking to see where the woman's earning more and other families and balancing, and really use them as role models.
Right. So shifting from Doris Day, Martha Stewart role models to, you know, who's doing it, who's doing life in a way that you really admire and respect. And it may be somebody who, when you ask them to do something, said no. And you're like, oh, I want to know how to be able to say no that clearly and respectfully.
We're definitely going to do a show on saying no, Emily.
Yeah, I think
that's
you're right.
That's a great topic and so important.
Our inspiring invitation is see if there's one small step that you can take from what you heard today that can support you in co-creating a new approach to financial inequality that you may be having with your life partner. We covered a lot of territory. We have some useful tools for you. We talked about Rocking Your World by Jenny Garrett, Breadwinner Wives and the Men They Marry by Randy Minotaur, and there's also The Richer Sex by Liza Mundy. Those are three great books that all address this issue. We also spoke about our rich dad portfolio.
Yeah,
and,
go ahead, Em.
We have our rich life portfolio, and we have our prenup counseling and coaching for couples, and you can find out more about that at wealthlegacygroup.net. Thanks so much.
We look forward to speaking with you guys next week.
Yeah. Thanks so much. A great, great show, and we look forward to your feedback.